Welcome to Late Night Net Mums with me, Annie O'Leary, editor of Net Mums.
And me, Carol Jurgensen Sheets, a psychotherapist and certified sex addiction therapist.
Together, we answer your most asked sex and relationship questions from the Net Mums Forum. Welcome to a new edition of Late Night Net Mums with me, Annie O'Leary, and my lovely co-host, Carol Jurgensen Sheets. We're all okay this end, but I thought of you this week, Carol. I've been reading, apparently people in relationships have been having less sex in lockdown. Do you know if this is true? And if so, why?
You know, I have not found that to be true at all.
Interesting.
My clients are talking about having more sex because they're more rested, because they're not doing as much because they're locked down.
How can, if people are finding it hard, what can they do?
Well, they have to make time. And, you know, that is such an unromantic concept, but you have to find the time to have sex. And so many couples find it first thing in the morning before the kids are even up. They actually set the alarm and they wake up to having sex.
Okay. And is there a magic number for how often this should happen?
I have to say that research shows that after 2 years of marriage, the average couple, and you're not going to like this, Annie.
Oh, gosh, go on.
The average couple has sex 3 times a month. But what we advocate for is at least twice a week.
Okay, so why the disparity? Why are people only doing it 3 times a month, but why do experts like you say do it twice a week?
Well, I'm a believer in approaching sex in all sorts of ways. So maybe an oral sex encounter would count as sex. Maybe a quickie would count as sex. But it's a way to be together and to remind each other how much you care for and love each other. And that's why we say twice a week. Now, in today's show, we're going to be talking about a lot of women that have no sexual appetite.
Yes, that's a theme this week, isn't it, Carol?
It absolutely is. And that is not uncommon either. So we're going to talk about how do you rev things up so that you don't make that statistic of 3 times a month. You actually increase the amount of time together pleasing each other physically. I mean, that's a very important part of a relationship. Maybe not the most important, but a very important part.
Okay, well, let's get going then and see what we can uncover. Right, with the first thread today, we hear that I've been in a relationship with my partner for over 10 years. He has a high sex drive and I have a low one. He's always bugging me for it to the point I just give in to him to shut him up for peace and quiet. I can't keep doing this though. It's not fair on me. So I've suggested, oh lordy, having an open relationship with him so he can have the sex he wants and I can have peace. He seems to think it would bother me, but it really won't. I just don't know what to do. I can't keep forcing myself to sleep with him, and he doesn't seem to understand that I feel an open relationship is what's going to give us both what we want. Has anyone been in an open relationship? Any advice? Much appreciated. Okay, Carol.
Yes?
I'm freaking out at this idea. I don't like the idea of an open relationship at all. What do you think? Can they ever work?
Well, the truth of the matter is that's an option that she has thought about because that's how much she doesn't want to have sex. But has she really thought out the consequences of that choice? For instance, you know, that would mean that she would need regular STD tests to make sure that she was physically safe. You know, has she thought about that? He seems to think she wouldn't like it. So does that mean that there might be a jealous streak in her and that eventually his time with someone else would jeopardize their relationship? It certainly could. And so I believe this is a couple that really needs to see a sex expert, somebody who can talk with them about the fact that we're not talking polyamory here. We're not talking about two people that want relationships outside of their own, and they'll be happy with that. Polyamory actually does work. But we're talking about one woman who I believe wants to lead her own life the way she's been living and allowing her husband to go out and be captivated by someone else. The chances of him staying faithful to her are very, very slim if he finds somebody else that's happy with their sex life and is willing to give him emotional needs that he also needs.
This is complicated stuff, isn't it?
Yes, it absolutely is. And, you know, I got some questions for her. I want to know what is going on with her history. Why does she feel that she doesn't really want to have sex? Has there been some sort of trauma in her background? You know, many women, when they have been exploited or abused, they really are uncomfortable with sex and would prefer to live that kind of asexual life. And so I want to know about her history. Did you think at all about that, Annie?
Yeah, I did think about that. Can I just ask some really basic questions, though, right? What's the difference between polyamory and an open relationship? Is poly when they both want to do it? And open is just whoever can do whatever the hell they want. I don't understand.
No, you do understand. That's exactly right.
And
with polyamory, they would more than likely also have many, many couples that they would participate with. I mean, there is a whole culture of polyamorous couples. And so they would find out where and how they meet, and they would become friends with them, and they would both be involved with this culture emotionally, socially, and sexually. And so the culture and the community supports this, whereas an open relationship means, as you said, he can do the hell, whatever he wants. And I'm telling you, the chances of them staying together would be very, very slim.
So why do you, okay, so then let's dive into that then. Why would the chances be slim? Because he's likely to meet someone who likes sex more, and then he feels more comfortable with that and then decides he wants to be with them. Is that the risk?
Well, that's part of the risk. The other risk is that on some level, he's going to feel rejected by her.
If he doesn't already, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And he seems to know her pretty well because he says she wouldn't like that. Mm. And so if she brainstorms this idea and they actually play it out, it very well could be the end of their relationship. So does she really want to take that risk?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, actually. Is there anyone, ultimately, when push comes to shove, who would be comfortable with that? Or do we all ultimately end up feeling jealous in that kind of situation? I mean, is it possible to not feel jealous in that?
Yes, there are couples that have had open relationships. And because they're both getting something very, very substantial, usually for the couples that I've worked with and that I've researched, there is monetary and financial gain sustained in the relationship.
Okay.
She doesn't mention anything about money. And Annie, I just think before she throws the baby out with the bathwater, she also needs to have a good physical history. I mean, she may be on a medication that suppresses her desire for sex.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, most antidepressants actually affect sexuality. And so, sexual drive and sexual urges. And so she might need to have somebody look at her medicines. If she's not on any medicine, she might want to look at some bioidentical medications that could increase sex drive, that might increase testosterone. She, just like a man, may be low on testosterone. And if she's low, that would affect her urges, her cravings, her desires for sex.
So in both those instances, the first step then would be your doctor, wouldn't it? Because obviously we don't want anyone not taking their antidepressants so that they can feel more up for it. Likewise, do you have to see your doctor if you think you need a medication to boost your sex drive?
Yes, absolutely. And our rule of thumb in psychotherapy is you always go for the physiological first. I mean, you don't want to treat something emotional if it really is physical. The second thing is the reason I recommended a sex expert, and certainly the College of Sexual and Relationship Therapists over in the UK would be a good choice. COSRT, that is the acronym for the sex experts in the UK. So she can go to that. Now, here's what I gathered from her posting.
Right.
She doesn't really have the desire to increase her sexuality.
Yeah.
And that's really important. She's invested in this relationship. I said sex may not be the most important thing, but it typically is a very viable resource for men. And even though she's okay with having no sex drive, he's not. And it's not really fair if you're in relationship with somebody not to look into what you can do to both be more compatible. That is what we owe each other if we're going to be in relationship with each other.
But what do you do if it's just kind of mismatched and there's one who's always up for it and one who's like, eh, once a month is fine?
Well, I think you work with a specialist to see if you can't find more compatibility so there isn't as much of a kind of a power differential.
So, and who goes to the therapist then? Is it both? Is it just her? What's the deal here?
I would suggest that they go together because there may be other issues that are affecting the drive. I mean, how much does she love him? Are there any conflicts in their relationship that may be getting in the way of her desire to please him? And then, of course, it's really important for her to decide, does she want more of a sexual relationship for herself? I mean, it doesn't sound like she has any desire to expand her own sexual awareness or pleasure. And if that's the case, someone probably needs to help her decide why. And then if that truly remains her choice to not want to develop that, they probably need somebody help to help them navigate what they can do about their relationship, because an open relationship is probably not going to work.
I'm glad my hunch was right on that, Carol. So let's say they go together, they go and see an expert. What's the expert likely to say or recommend or try and explore with them? What could the possibilities be?
You know, so many couples utilize sex to connect. And was that a part of their relationship when they first dated? We know that the lust factor, the infatuation factor, occurs for the first 6 to 18 months of a relationship. So was she more sexual then? And if she was she able to seek sexual pleasure? There's a part of me that wonders, is he somebody who is a good lover? Many men don't know how to have sex, and so they don't know how to please a woman. They don't know how to really work with the clitoris. There's just lots of issues, technical issues, that can make lovemaking more of a chore than an experience. And so, again, a sex educator could help him to become a better lover. And if he is better at sex, is that going to increase her desire to have sex? I mean, this may be an issue for her, but ultimately, this may be an issue for him. And that's why I think both of them should go in together, talk about what their early sex life was like, then talk about what happened, when did it seem to shift or change, and again, find out the variables. You know, have either one of them ever been sexually abused? Have they ever been sexually exploited? What were they taught about sex? All the variables that go into having a good sex life. If they're going to work on sexual reintegration, they'll need an expert to help them with that.
But I'm already panicking now on his behalf and thinking they're going to go to this therapist and this therapist is going to say, it's all your fault, mister, you're rubbish in bed. And then that will just make him feel sad. How would we stop that from happening, Carol?
Well, the truth of the matter is those are trained professionals that know how to be non-judgmental, would never identify one person as having the problem and would really help both of them to figure out what they could do to enhance their relationship. And we all know as professionals that people are very sensitive about sex and they don't want to be identified. Well, we call it as the IP, the identified patient. That's never much fun. Yeah. But that's a good question, Annie.
So no one will be, there won't be any blame being portioned out. It would all be very collaborative. Yes. I just don't want to put anyone off from going for help.
Well, I understand that. And absolutely. And especially sex educators, counselors, and therapists. I mean, they realize that this is a very sacred subject to talk about and one that most people are not really comfortable talking about. And it does take a lot of courage to go to somebody and work on that. And I'm not sure she's going to want to do it. Whenever somebody says, you just go out and have your own fun, she's really somewhat checked out of the relationship.
Yeah, that's what, that was the kind of overwhelming worry that I had reading it. It almost sounds like it's a bigger issue than just the bedroomy stuff.
Well, again, I don't think she's really thought about the consequences of what could happen.
Yes.
And we just discussed the fact that he is more than likely going to end up finding somebody else. And is that what she really wants? I would wonder, is this a woman who's maybe checked out of the relationship and by offering him an opportunity to be with somebody else, it's an open door to maybe getting out of the relationship.
I can't believe I'm such an idiot. Of course, that must be what it is, Carol.
Well, I don't know that to be true, Annie. But what I do know is that that will likely be the consequence, and we don't want that to happen.
No, so get some help, guys. Come on, come on.
And I believe they can if they're willing to. And if she chooses not to, then she's sealing her own fate.
She is. Right, two last questions for me on this one. Number one, how common is this? And two, what's the hope? Like, is it quite easy to fix if you decide you want to fix it? Or is it a bit touch and go?
Okay, I personally feel like this is a pretty complex problem. Because, again, the chances of them being able to diagnose what the problem is very slim. That's why they have to seek professional help, first going to a physician and then going to a sex expert. That's a lot of work. And I didn't see anything in this blog that said this woman is willing to do work. She's just kind of picking the easiest thing out.
Yeah.
It's not very common. To answer your first question,
yes,
it is not common for women to say, you just go find somebody else. I'll be okay. That is not a common response.
No, I haven't got any friends who've ever suggested this to their husbands, put it that way. Right, I hope they get the help that they need. Please go and get that help. Shall we move on to our second thread of the day?
Sounds good.
It says, while I was in bed last night, my partner was downstairs watching porn. I knew something was up because he came to see if I was awake. My eyes were closed, but I was awake. I found it strange. Then this morning, he hid his laptop under his bed, and when my son wanted to play with it, he said no. I then checked the history when he was downstairs, and it all came up. Horrible, hardcore videos. When I approached him, he denied it at first, but he was the only one on that computer, so now he's kind of admitted it, but says we'll talk later. I was so upset, I also checked his Facebook account to see if anything was going on. I'm pregnant, so I'm a bit more hormonal, but he knows how I feel about porn. I see it as a form of cheating. The fact I was upstairs in bed and he was downstairs watching that makes me feel sick. He's obsessed with sex, though, and always wants it, whereas I don't have a huge sex drive. I'm worried he's doing other things, and this is obviously not the only time I've caught him out. What do I do now? I'm upset and angry. Carol, this feels bad.
Well, it's bad because they both have different views, more than likely, on pornography. Now, what do you think she meant when she said, I feel that, how did she put it, that there's something else or he's doing other things?
Yeah, she says near the end, doesn't she? And I thought that was almost the bigger thing. I'm worried he's doing other things. So I'm guessing that because she sees porn as a form of cheating, that she thinks maybe he's cheating in other ways as well. That's what I took it to mean.
Yes, I didn't understand that either. So I didn't know if she meant that maybe he was looking at women on web chats or webcams. I just wasn't sure. And that is always inherently a possibility. But let's go back to the real issue, which is they probably have very different feelings about pornography. And I'm just going to check in with you, Annie. Do you feel that pornography is cheating on a woman?
Well, I didn't before, but you know what? I was thinking about this when we were prepping for the show, and I was thinking, how would I feel if I was this person? And it would feel a bit like cheating. The thing of her being upstairs in bed, and I get what she's saying. I'd never thought about it that way before, but I do get what she's saying. What do you think, Carol?
Well, I believe that's a very individualized experience for everybody. I mean, I totally understand. I work with a lot of women who feel that when a man looks at pornography, he's actually objectifying women. He's wanting to be with them. He's training his brain to enjoy that kind of arousal template. And so it very much can feel like cheating. That is certainly one aspect. I also really believe that men have been taught to look at pornography for stimulation, that they are very stimulated by sight, but that they don't actually put anything into pornography that would involve wishing that they were with that person, that they're not relationship focused. And so really they're using pornography to sexually stimulate and have orgasm. And I understand why she might not want that, but it probably does not in any way feel like cheating to him. It's a very compartmentalized experience. And so you got two people that are more than likely seeing this issue as A, him wanting individual freedom to sexually stimulate himself in what he sees as, you know, a non-invasive way. And then B, she is very upset because she feels like he is going to other sources to have that stimulation. So I understand where their values are different. I don't want to pathologize either one of them. But no, this is causing great conflict in their relationship.
Yeah, she's taking it really badly, and I really feel for her. What should she do? It says they're going to talk later. What would be the best way to have that kind of conversation?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, she had said that they were tiptoeing around this. So
yes,
that's the point of intervention. They really do need to talk about this. And she needs to try to be as non-judgmental as possible, as non-defensive as possible, so that she can understand what is going on for him. You know, how long has he been looking at porn? He obviously was hiding it from her. He knew that it would be upsetting to her. And I'm wondering if they
and
have
that. I was just going to say, I think that might be why she feels a bit cheated on. It's the sneaking around that gives it the air of the cheating, doesn't it?
Well, it makes you wonder if they didn't have a conversation and he at some point said, yes, I won't look at pornography. And that's why she feels deceived. I don't know. Oftentimes, men will be asked about their pornography use, and two things happen. One is a man is typically in denial, and so he doesn't see it as that big of a problem. And he may even have said, I won't do this. And he really meant it.
At the time, yes.
Yeah, and then when he got back into his real routine, he thought, what she doesn't know won't hurt her.
Eek, that's a horrible thought.
Well, unfortunately, that doesn't work because women are smart. They're intuitive.
Yes.
She became the private eye. She looked at the browsing history. I don't like that he that his son or their son or her son was going to look at the laptop, and he was afraid to allow that to happen. You know, parents really need to protect their children from looking at porn. Kids are going to see pornography, but it shouldn't be because mom or dad are watching it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so they need to have some really difficult conversations about what has his porn use been like. Are they willing to negotiate and compromise? You know, that might mean, are you willing to lock up your device so that at least our children won't see it? Or are you willing to modify how much you look at porn? I get the impression from her that there is not going to be any compromise and negotiation here. She is going to want him to stop looking at pornography, period.
How reasonable is that to ask? Can someone say, you know what, that isn't my values. I don't want a relationship where that happens. Is that okay to say that and expect the other person to agree?
Well, that's reasonable to ask and it's reasonable to share. But if you don't have a buy-in from that other person, then you have to figure out how you can reckon with the difference. Because the truth of the matter is, if he's not willing to stop, they are going to have a life of her catching him. And once a woman has found out that her husband is using pornography and she is against it, she becomes an investigator and looks for more proof that she's being deceived. And so it sets them up for a very conflictual relationship.
Yeah, almost like cat and mouse, isn't it?
Yes. And you know, the last thing a woman wants to do is to be a prison warden or a mother or a probation officer. And yet, when she feels deceived, she's going to do what she can to either find evidence that that is continuing or find evidence that she's safe. And so back to your original question, what do you do when you have two people with opposing values? You have to figure out how you can accept the other person exactly as he or she is.
But what if you can't?
Well, then more than likely, this is a couple that won't be staying together because the conflict around pornography is going to continue. It isn't going to get better if she's not willing to surrender to the fact that he's looking at things and maybe talk with a counselor about how she can feel less threatened by his use. And that may be a value she's not willing to let go of. And if that's the case, that's okay. But it too has consequences for the relationship. I mean, if she really feels he's cheating on her, then she's probably not going to put up with his cheating, if you know what I mean.
So if they went to see someone to talk about it, could someone help them negotiate some kind of compromise? I always think compromises are the solution to everything. They probably aren't. What do you think, Carol?
Well, a compromise would be you don't look at pornography when we are in the house. A compromise would be if he were a salesperson, you can look at pornography when you're in the hotel, but not, I don't want pornography in my home.
Yeah, I get that.
So the compromise may be, you know, you look at pornography in places that are away from me. Now, you know, do we want him looking at pornography in the car?
Yeah, now that you've said that out loud, I don't like that either.
Uh-huh. Because?
Well, it's kind of almost driving his, it's like saying, take your sex life somewhere else. And that doesn't feel very healthy either, does it?
Yes. You know, I wouldn't want him doing it outside of the home unless he had a safe place to do it. You know, again, if he is going to choose pornography for sexual stimulation over his family, he might have a bigger problem too. He might have, problematic sexual compulsive behavior. And if he's taught his brain that this is how he can have stimulation, he might want to go to a certified sex and porn addiction specialist to determine, is it something he can stop?
Yes.
That's a whole nother issue. And, you know, for many, many men, that is the position they're in. They've been looking at pornography since they were 11 or 12. You know, if he's 35, you know, that's over two decades of looking at pornography. And he may have trained his brain to have that, not just for sexual stimulation, but to combat boredom, to combat depression, to combat loneliness, to combat stress. And if he's using it as a medication and he can't stop, then that's an issue that he would need to work on. And we don't know if it's gone to that degree, but many men actually do have a dependency on porn that they can't stop by themselves.
That's scary. How rare or common is that, Carol?
Well, it happens to about 26%.
What? That's one in four.
Yes, exactly.
That's scary.
Well, that's how affordable, anonymous, and accessible pornography is to men and women alike. It's not just a male problem. It's more male than female, but it can happen to women too.
Wow. I'm just thinking, if you're sat on a bus, that's a lot of the people on the bus with you, isn't it?
Well, unfortunately, yes. And, you know, if I can throw in one other variable,
right.
Oftentimes children, especially males who have been exploited and traumatized sexually, and that's typically one out of every 10.
Oh, that's an awful number.
Yes, they've actually, to master the feelings of inadequacy and inferiority, have fused their own sexuality with a sense of control. And with pornography, there's a real sense of control because you can turn it on when you want to. You can watch what you want to watch. It keeps you anonymous and invisible. You're more of a voyeur. And it is
and
a
no
way
to reject you, I guess. Yeah, no one could say. Like, they're not going to turn around mid-video and go, stop watching, you horrible person, are they? It's a rejection-free exercise, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And so if they've been looking at it for medication purposes and not even knowing that, then you get into a whole nother psychological area that makes it even more complex. And that's why, you know, when they're having their frank discussion, she needs to be non-judgmental. She needs to not in any way, shape, or form shame or blame him. But she needs to go into this relationship saying, I really do want to understand what's going on. You know, I think it's cheating, but I'm going to try to put that on the back burner and just understand where you're coming from right now so that I'll have a better idea of the man that's sitting in front of me. And if she can do that, that shows a lot of emotional maturity. That's what I would recommend that she do.
Oh, but Carol, that sounds really hard. That means she's got to not be angry, and we know she is, not be hurt, and we know she is. How can you, because this could be about anything, right, in a relationship. You're angry, you're hurt, but you know you've got to talk about it. How do you put the anger and the hurt aside and have that very supportive kind of conversation? That must be so difficult.
Well, it is. I always say to my couples, you know, when I'm working with you, my goal is to increase the relationship's emotional maturity. So I'm going to ask you to do some really hard things because I know it's going to grow you up in terms of how you talk to each other and how you feel about each other and ultimately how you feel about yourself. And so I look at it from an emotional IQ point of view. And if they know that they're involved in a process that's going to help them to be a better participant in the relationship, they are able to put their anger, sadness, fear, rejection over to the side and really hear what the other person has to say.
It just all sounds really tough. I really hope they go and get some help with this. Is it fascinating, isn't it, Carol? Every time we come up against one of these problems, it at first seems to be one thing, but then when you dig and you peel away the layers of the onion, it's often more complex and reveals more about the state of the relationship or their ability to communicate than you would have thought at first glance. Is that what you find often with couples who you're treating?
Yes, the nature and complexity of the relationship, but more often the relationship to oneself and what one has had to deal with in their past that may be interfering with working towards the future with someone else.
We're all bringing things to relationships that we don't even necessarily know that we're bringing, right?
Right, exactly, Annie.
I almost feel like I'm starting to think from these late night sessions with you that every couple should have some kind of couples therapy. Should they? Like every time you decide to get married to someone, should you go and have some therapy? Or should we all just have therapy all the time? Or should we all do it once a year? Or what's the recommendation?
Oh, I wouldn't project that onto every couple by any sense of the imagination. But I would say if you have conflict, it's really the most helpful thing you can do to meet with somebody who's neutral, who can guide you through a lot of these issues and a lot of the conflict. But not necessarily does everybody need to go to therapy. I would never say that.
Okay. All right. Maybe it's just the issues that we're dealing with here on Late Night Net Mums. Well, Carol, thank you so much for being an amazing, wise expert for us on this episode. I can't wait to talk to you next time. Thank you.
You're welcome, Annie. It's always a pleasure.
That's all for this episode. Thanks for joining us. Remember, to get help and support from others like you on sex and relationship issues, please post in the Sex and Relationships board in the NetMums forum. To submit a question specifically for consideration on this podcast, head to the board marked Late Night NetMums in the NetMums forum. Everything said on this podcast is the opinion of the hosts and is for information and education purposes only. This podcast should not be considered as therapy or a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out expert guidance from a mental health or relationships professional to assist you with your own specific issues.